Welcome to the GA Hour with me, Niall McIntyre. It gives me great pleasure to say that after all the Zooms and all the recordings and dodgy signals, we're back in the studio today. And what's even better is that as well as our Gaelic football correspondent, Lee Costello, we're also joined by Roscommon legend, Shane Curran. And Shane, what a day to have you. What a week to have you.
Good evening. Good afternoon, Niall. Yeah, what a week. Yeah, what a week is right. Yeah, Easter weekend. And a new time to be talking about championship football and all that. But what a weekend for us down in Roscommon. And it's given great energy over the Easter weekend. I know my daughter was out Sunday night. There was a big celebration in the local Rockfords with all the players and that. And it's great to see that energy is there. And after a really, really historic win down in McHale Park.
Yeah, you definitely had the two screens open on Sunday, I think, Shane, because I seen you at one stage you were tweeting goal, goal, goal. And I was wondering, was my television behind? But there was a hashtag Martinelli to follow. So you were a busy man on Sunday.
I was, yeah. Fortunately enough, I had the two screens all right. I was trying to keep everyone away from me, though, because our house is not simple when the Gunners are on, and definitely not simple when you have the Gunners and Roscommon on in the championship. And I just got back from Killarney with Colliery. We were down for a weekend down in Killarney, where we were really well looked after as well, I hasten to add. And it was great to get back Sunday. A little bit shook, I have to say, but to watch both games. And both games were thrilling, but in particular, obviously, the Roscommon result.
Roscommon would have picked up anyway. And you were busy, I'd say, watching the two games as well, Lee, as a Liverpool fan.
Yeah. Didn't have the same invested interest in Roscommon, but you just love to see the underdog, pull something off. So it was a really enjoyable game. I was going to switch the Liverpool game off at half time, to be honest. But then the referee elbowed Robertson, and I was like, I might stick around. This could be something. And the 2-2 was brilliant, yeah. I mean, Easter Sunday, football, pints, Easter eggs, it's the dream.
Jeez, we're nearly forgetting this a GA podcast, but I suppose last question, will the Gunners do it, yes or no?
Yeah, I think they will, actually. Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I think, some would say it was 2 points dropped at Anfield, others would say a point gained. I put my positivity hat on. I think after watching Rambo make 2 world-class saves in the last second, where you could be lose a game 3-2 that you're really composed in and drilling down through it at 2-0 and have a chance to go 3-0, and it ends up, I think 2-2 was probably a fair result. And Mick Arteta was saying afterwards that, it looks like 2 points dropped, but on balance, I think the draw was a fair result. And things people forget then, I think Arsenal's the only team to go there this season, and one of the few of the top six over the last few years to actually get a point there. So it's a hard place to go. And as Manchester United fans know, we didn't catapult to the 7-up and 7-0. So it was lucky, we got our 2-2 draw. And
I'm so glad we got that in.
I'm nearly forgetting this is a GA podcast here today. So we will go straight back to the Roscommon Mayo game. You tweeted at the end of this one, Shane, that it was the brotherly love of the Roscommon players, the Dalys, the Smiths and the Murtas. And I suppose you could see that in their display. Peter Canavan said after the game that you can talk all you want about game plans and tactics, but championship football, it comes down to heart and hunger. And Roscommon definitely had that on Sunday.
Yeah, and not only that, but, to be able to execute the attitude with the application of the game plan, because it's obvious that Davy Burke and his management team had put a huge store and a huge emphasis on a game plan against Mayo, irrespective of the environment that the team found themselves in. And obviously the environment was that it was a very windy, obviously windy day, wet day that maybe you mightn't expect in the middle of April. And certainly very few times you have that in championship football, but being as it is with the date and the start, April can throw up all sorts of weather. And Roscommon looked to be ultrally well prepared, and the attitude that these guys, along with others, brought to the match resulted in us getting the victory. And look at the three sets of brothers that I alluded to in the tweet. They owe Roscommon football nothing. They've been outstanding over the last number of years. And I'd have to add to that, I think Davy Murray was just terrific as well. He was probably Tenda Smith. He ran him very close, I would say, to man of the match, along with my St. Bridges club mate Ben O'Carroll was also fantastic on his debut for a young fella. So I think what they've done is they've married the bit of experience, or the lot of the experience of the three sets of brothers, one or two others, and the youth that have come in. And Keith Doyle, the midfielder, had a very, very good game, if not his best game in a Roscommon shirt so far. And I think it was that attitude and that application that was the difference in the two sides, without a doubt. Looking at Mayo, you know, I felt they looked a bit jaded. I think on the evidence going into the match, most people would have said that they'd win pretty comfortably down there in, with their own pitch and their own fans. But they never gave their fans anything to shout about, and they seemed to be. It was very benign. It was an off par performance, but it was off par basically because Roscommon, man for man, knew their job. I think better than Mayo's, and they went and they executed it on the day. And Davy Burke, I think in a time where managers and coaches and they are told to act and work in such a way, it's great to see somebody as refreshing as him on the sideline that actually wears his bloody heart in his sleeve. And he I think that's embedded into the team. It has infused them with energy and with confidence, and they're playing like a team that the manager believes in them. And it was interesting, I suppose, to hear him talk a couple of times over the league. He has set down a few ground rules, and I think over the last 3 or 4 years, there's probably been an underbelly or an undercurrent of softness within the team. We've been beaten by Clare, we've been poor in the championship by and large. He's dropped a few players now and again throughout the league. He's tested their psychological credentials. They've come back stronger. They've come back harder. There's been an infusion of youth into the squad as well, which has embellished what his message. And it's great to see that, and it's great to see the energy he has after the game. He's looking forward to the next match. He's looking forward to the Hyde being full. He's looking forward to the Galway game, and that sort of energy transmits to the players, and the players pick up off that, you know. And I'd love to see far more of that in the GAA. I think we've become far more politically correct than we should do, you know.
Yeah, well, as Shane alluded to there, Lee, it wasn't just a display of, as well as all the heart that Roscommon brought, they also brought lots of, like, it wasn't just silly jumping into tackles and giving away silly frees. They were disciplined their tackling. Mayo only scored 4 frees on the day, and as well as that, Roscommon seemed to have a clear plan to catch Mayo out by a few balls or fist ball passes over the top and to create goal chances through that.
No, absolutely. And I think they did their homework from the league final. It sort of brings the spotlight back on the whole league campaign last week. League finals were brilliant. Mayo were brilliant. You know, of course you want to play a final. But now, after watching that, you can tell that Roscommon had really done their homework. And the Davy Burke said after the match that he thought last week a lot of Mayo scores came from free kicks and marks and things that got, you know, sort of set plays, and he thought the referee last week was a little bit more casual, and you know, he gave the freeze very soft, and he was sort of banking on that not being the case this time around, and he was absolutely right to do so. Going in hard with the tackles, they weren't getting away with everything. I think it was best typified in the first half. Aidan O'Shea got blew up for over carrying, and but if that was last week, even just 7 days ago, you know, that would have been a free to Aidan O'Shea. That's just the way it was sort of going. So playing the referee and being smart like that is important. Mayo do have issues in that sense. You know, I think it was only 4 points from play last week. The rest was all from frees and marks, you know. So that was maybe a weakness that he addressed that no one else had sort of picked up on. So very clever from Roscommon in a tactical point of view. The preparation, like, love it when a plan comes together, don't you? You know, when someone goes out and set, and the players started to buy into that more and more. You know, this is what Davy said would happen. This is what's happening. And they just grew with confidence, and they knew they had it figured out, and Mayo came stuck.
Yeah, well, Mayo missed those goal chances early on. They executed them, like, poorly. Tommy Conroy fisted one over the bar, and Aidan O'Shea was giving out stink to him outside. There was another overhit fist pass. I think it was Ryan O'Donoghue to Tommy Conroy. Yeah. Then Stephen Cohen hit the bar. So when they missed them goal chance on a day like that, I'd say you knew watching it that this was going to be trouble for Mayo. But you mentioned, Shane, earlier on that they were a little bit benign and that they stood off Roscommon a small bit. And I suppose that was a little bit strange from a team like Mayo, who should have been playing with such confidence.
Yeah, it was actually, I was dumbfounded by it, really, particularly the first 10 to 15 minutes. Now, you know, tactically, Roscommon's game plan, you know, revolved around killing the game, particularly in the first half when the environment was a strong win for Mayo. So the onus really is on the likes of Mayo then to go after the game, to squeeze up on kickouts, to squeeze up the pitch, make the pitch really, really tight, like Roscommon did in the second half. But they didn't seem to do it. They didn't seem to have the energy to do it. They didn't seem to maybe be applied towards doing it like Roscommon were. It was interesting, Kevin made a made a comment after the game that he felt one of the goals would have settled them. But I think in a game like this, you play it at a pace that's going to settle yourself. And when you miss those chances, which they did, it boils down to two things. It means your attitude isn't right, or your execution of it isn't right. And some generally, when you're off, it's a bit of both, and it ends up that you miss the chances. And down the other end, the game now is about learning how to play fast and play slow in certain periods. And Roscommon learned how to shift the ball around, move the ball in, move the ball out, enter space, exit space, and re-enter the space. And when you look at it tactically, the two goals are actually a mirror image of both side from both sides. Davy Murray on the other side getting in behind on a third pass, in behind the defender, into a void space. It's not taken up. He ends up being found, and it's a penalty. The second one is Kieran Lennon entering space, exiting the space, going back into the space over the top. Okay, I think there was a bit of luck, to be fair. I think it got blocked down off a Mayo player. I'd say Kieran, in most cases, would punch that over the bar. But fortune favours the brave. He went for the goal. We got the break. And Enda's is following it in. So very, very much tactically like soccer teams approach breaking down low blocks in terms of defensive strategies. And that's really the way the game has gone. You've got a bit of basketball. You've got a bit of a hybrid of soccer and basketball now, where you know how to play fast. You know how to play slow, and the good players have a realization of when to find space at the right time and execute then in a zone that is conducive to putting the ball in the back of the net or over the bar. Mayo struggled with that against the wind. They struggled with it with the wind as well, in terms that if you take Roscommon's six scores in the second half, one was Enda Smith actually running at the defence, pop over the bar. Three were scores from Jeremy Murtha and Kieran Murtha from 45, 50 yards.
And Connor Cox.
Yeah, and Connor Cox. I think four of those scores, two from the Murthas, one from a free and two from open play, came from really outside what I would call a tap zone, a tap scoring area, you know, you're through tracking point. And Mayo didn't seem to have that, or they didn't have the application to do it, or they didn't have the attitude to go and do it. And if you're off a team like Roscommon, did you give them a two-goal lead, they've something to fight for then. And the other team, Mayo, just I don't think they could feel a way around breaking them down. I think they were running the ball into dark alleys. Roscommon's defending was really, really tight. It was really cooperative. They were working hard together. And when they broke at pace. They broke in twos and threes. They got out to the wide positions very early. They stretched Mayo, and they got the six scores in the second half. Interestingly, I think it was 10 scores from 20. Both teams, so 10 scores from 20 opportunities. Roscommon's two goals really were the killing difference, and Mayo didn't get those two goals. You know, in overtime, when the season rolls on, maybe Mayo will say, look, it's been a blessing in disguise to be out of it. For us, I would have been very happy to get a good performance down in Castlebar last weekend. And even be beaten or narrowly win. We've narrowly won, which gives us impetus now going to the Galway game, and all that is very good. And I think Davy alluded to that if you want to become a top six team, which we've probably struggled for over the last number of years, you have to be trying to win these games against the big teams and create that sense of expectation. And with the league form being the way it was, and staying in Division 1, now beating Mayo down in Castlebar, we've got a great opportunity, looking forward to the rest of the campaign and with aplomb and with confidence.
Definitely. Just one thing there. So you've played under Kevin McStay, so you and Lee McHale, you won an All-Ireland club with him with St. Bridget's. Like, so you know what those boys are all about. And I think at times maybe is there a tendency, if things go wrong and if a team kind of maybe steps back a bit, as we said Mayo did, they didn't really press up on Roscommon. We nearly always blame the tactics and the management. But do you think it could be an attitude kind of thing when they're just after winning the league and maybe they were a bit, you know, this wasn't do or die for Mayo, and that maybe a loss in the long run mightn't be the worst thing in the world when they're chasing All Ireland?
Yeah, I think when they sit back and settle back and you know, take a break from each other now and get back into the court and trust of the championship, we're kind of really in look, we're in virgin territory here. We're in very new territory in terms of the makeup of the championship, coming off a league game, a league final, 7 days later, getting up for a big championship match. Roscommon had that 2 week window, coming off a really, really positive result against Donegal, irrespective of what Donegal were at. It was a really positive result, just kicked over 20 points in that game. Davey had the 2 weeks to work on the game, work on a setup, work on the game plan. Mayo maybe had that week, and you're 3-4 days after that game, you're coming down maybe from winning it against a big team like Galway, and you're looking forward to three more championship matches in the Connacht Championship inside a 5 to 6 week pace. So the management can only do so much. I think the players, sometimes that just seeps into the mindset, and no matter what way you've been managed, it's very, very difficult, because you do know that, well, the championship is really not starting until the end of May. The provincials, I think, apart from Connacht and Ulster, you know, they're relatively passive. They're going to be relatively passive affairs in Munster, and certainly relatively passive affairs then in Leinster. So Connacht and Ulster may be a little bit of a different bind. But again, you know, it's very difficult. Like, you know, Kevin as a manager, I'm sure he was trying to focus the players in on this match and have things right. But sometimes it can just go again. Yeah, it can, you know, the confidence can seep away. The attitude can drop a little bit. And when that happens, any team can take advantage of it if they are in the mindset of actually going to win the match. And that's one thing you'd have to take your hat off to Roscommon. Forget about the Mayo stuff. Take your hat off to Roscommon. The attitude was brilliant, and that then allowed the execution, the application of the game plan to come along, and you know, and long may it continue.
Well, listen, Lee, Davey Burke is, I suppose, the man of the moment in that sense, and Shane mentioned him earlier. I love the attitude that he has and the way he talks in his post-match interviews. He's all enthusiasm, mm-hmm. I suppose, and he's not afraid, you know, he's not going around afraid to kind of say something or to say something that's maybe a little bit off, giving something to another team. And he came out after the game and he was talking about, you know, you'd swear we were a lower level team and we were disrespected and everything. Like, he has so much to do with this success for Roscommon.
Yeah, and I love that because it gives you a little window into what he's been telling the players, you know, all week long after watching the Mayo team. Like, he obviously takes in all the negative that may be coming from the media, even ourselves. I think last week we tipped Mayo to win, you know, sticking it on the walls in the dressing room, you in particular, Niall, and pointing the finger at you, and using that as fuel and for energy. And then even managers who do that, they would never admit to doing it. You know, they go on in front of a camera and they say, oh, we do our best, we take each game as it comes, and all the boring nonsense, you know, that we're all sick of in the media, and we're sitting here and we have to try and write something about that, like, you know, but outside of it, you know. But it's just a bit of honesty, a bit of transparency, and a genuine feel of like what a good feeling in a dressing room is like, and that's so contagious even to us. And like, we're not Roscommon people, but you can't help but like them, can't help but like what they're trying to do and what Davey Burke's trying to do, and it's definitely a difference maker. Like, I'm a big fan of him now, I have to say.
You're running a similar ship with Cowley, Shane, by the way you're going on, I presume.
Look at it, I mean, I suppose I might be of a positive mindset most of the time, in fairness, but I think when you're managing and coaching, you're always looking to critique, and you're always looking to see where you can get better, to be fair. And I just like that bit of energy. I like the bit of honesty. I don't like this sort of stuff, you know, that everything is so banal and so anal, but nearly all the time, really, with all the answers we get. And, you know, you're not really given any insight into the game. And I just hope, like, the media are sometimes funny. You know, media's changed, obviously, from back in the day. You know, we've got podcasts and we've got this cast and every other cast, really, you know. But, you know, and everybody has opinions, but sometimes those opinions aren't bound in facts. And the bottom line is, you got to refer to the facts all the time, and you got to refer to the energy and what you see in front of yourself. And look, what he's bringing is just is, and he's only a young guy, he's only 30, his backstory is very interesting, and he's only 36, I think, and but also the lads around him, you know, you Mark McHugh, you mm-hmm. have Jerry McGowan, and most importantly as well, you have from our own point of view in Roscommon, Eddie Lone is there as well. And Eddie has been involved a lot with under-20s and underage football. Jerry and Stephen as well, his brother, along with Paul Staunton, over the years have been involved at underage level, and they know the players that are coming up through the system. And, you know, you've the lads that were introduced the weekend, that bit of energy as well, aligned with the experience of the aforementioned lads. That's usually important, and it's not just about the manager, it's everything around them that's supporting it. And we always make the point that, you know, if you don't have the backroom team behind you, if you don't have everybody vested in you, the county board, the supporters, everything, and they're getting the resources that's required to make them better, any county can get better. You know, we see it with Louth, what Mickey Hart has brought to it. You can see it with London. You can see it with, not maybe so much London, but certainly Sligo. London, a lot of injuries. You can see it with New York. There's other examples of it, that when it's brought together, when Fermanagh is another example, mm-hmm. they're really doing well. That when you put a plan in place, you give players a roadmap. You're vested in them and you're interested in them and you'll give them confidence. Well, then I think anything is possible. And look, at our weekend was last weekend. I wouldn't be dissing on Mayo. I think they'll be back. I think they'll come back stronger. They're a very, very good county, I think, you know, when you look at them. If I could look at Roscommon in 10 years' time, where Mayo have been for the last 10 years, getting to 7-8 All-Ireland finals and putting it up to probably one of the greatest teams of all time, albeit they didn't get over the line, that's fine. Someday they will. There's no doubt about that. If we could be like that, and we aspire to be like that, and you aspire to compete, you know, and you put the resources behind it, you put a plan in place over the next 10 years to ensure that you can continue that on, not just be playing in the moment. And that's been a historical problem for probably smaller counties. You play in the moment, you enjoy the result, but what's actually happening behind the scenes? Yeah. How are we building the future? You know, how are we going to work towards making this better? How are we going to have better, more days like this? Mm. You know, and that's the key to actually fulfilling your promise over time. I understand. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. It's not. There will be bad days, and them are the days then that the Davy Burkes and all the managers that are involved, and particularly Davy because he's young, criticism comes your way then, and it's how you deal with it. But if the support structures are there, you can deal with it. And Mayo have to deal with it now. It'll be somebody else's turn next week, and then as the season goes on, you come to a finale, and the best team gets over the line. And there will be many winners and losers along the way, and there'll be many teams that have progressed. And I think, you know, you look at Colm Collins down in Clare as well. Wonderful. He's there 7-8 years, doing a great job. Kieran McGeaney and Armagh has brought them from a low ebb. He's brought them to where they are now. So that bit of belief in a plan is crucial.
And then, like, the opposite of that would even be Donegal at the minute, you know, where there's so much friction between the county board and the teams and the players, and the knock-on effect it has in a negative sense. You can see that's what it looks like when it's not right. So, you know, just as another clear example of why it's so important.
Yep.
And I suppose a place where it's going to be a little bit downbeat this week is Leitrim. I was talking to a few lads down in Leitrim over the weekend, and they were in the pub watching the match, and they just said, once that last New York penalty went in, you could have heard a pin drop. Mm-hmm. There was supposed to be music playing in the pub afterwards, and it was all done. Everyone gone home early, depressed.
Yeah.
So very disappointing for them. I'm sure you've seen it, Lee. It was a fast game, obviously, on the Gaelic Park surface. A lot of mistakes. A great win for New York and a disappointing loss for Leitrim.
And a historic win for New York. From a Leitrim point of view, I mean, like, it's Murphy's Law. You know, they're saying New York haven't had this win in a Connacht Championship, but it was always going to happen. It's just you didn't want to be the team that it happened to. Do you know what I mean? And Leitrim, it was like a perfect storm in terms of one team being absolutely getting everything right, and then another team falling down in areas that give the opposition a chance. But it was definitely their story on the day. Shane Carthy, what a player, that left foot point to equalise. You know, when that went over, you sort of felt like this is going to be their day. You know, the fairy tale's there. And listen, there's been a lot said about penalties in terms of they shouldn't be in the GAA. It's not a GAA thing. But wouldn't it have been really bad if that went to a replay? Like, you've been gutted, you know. I'm like for once I'm really glad that it went to penalties and we got a definitive winner on the day. Now, the penalties were shocking. Like, I think it was 2-0 they won in the end, and there was a lot of question marks about, you'll be able to say more, keepers coming off the line and all the rest of it. But look, they got there in the end. New York don't care how they got there, and it was amazing to watch.
Did you enjoy facing the penalties, Shane? I presume you enjoyed.
I did, because, you know, something, when you're a goalkeeper, really, you know, it's all the pressures on the player taking them, you know, and really it's an opportunity to be a hero. And I don't think the rules were generally followed, because I think the goalkeepers were really out in the penalty spot for some of the saves. I'm not surprised so many of them were missed, you know, but look, it's a great story. And again, you know, the Davy Burke story is a wonderful story for us and a wonderful story for Davy, for Davy in particular. But then you've got, on the flip side, you have an Dandy Morton as well, you know, that goes to New York, the first manager to lose. And he's going to need support from his county board. And for all the good things about New York, Shane Carty and Young Glynn from Galway. And what they have is, I think, a number, if the number I may not have right, but I think a half a dozen to seven players of Indigenous footballers now that are not Irish that have come up through the New York system, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's not too long ago that Kevin McStay led Roscommon with Fergal O'Donnell, were almost beaten there and just came out by across the width of a crossbar in 2016. So this has been coming, and they've been competitive against Sligo, they've been competitive against us. They have players out there now that have played the game and understand the game. And, you know, you'd be delighted for them, absolutely thrilled for them. But also, I think you have to feel for Leitrim as well, you know. But that's sport, you know, it's ups and downs and it's ins and outs. It'll be interesting. They have to travel now to Sligo for the Connacht semi-final. So that'll bring a whole other set of challenges, but I'm sure it's one they're looking forward to, and they've earned the right now to be there, and fair play to them. And Shane Carty, what a score. I think I was listening to him, I think he played the full game with a right quad gone and could only kick the ball with his left foot. Like, that's just,
imagine him with 2 feet.
Imagine him with 2 feet. So, but look, it's a brilliant story, and you could see actually the outpouring of emotion as well on the pitch after the game, that it meant so much to them. And obviously the communities over there as well, not only are the football clubs, they're social clubs, they do an awful lot for people going out to find people jobs and things like that. And you know, it's a great story. It's something, I suppose, when we look back on the highlights reel of this year, that it'll feature quite highly.
Well, you mentioned Shane Carty there, and he also said in that interview that he's based in Boston, and he's making, it's a 4-hour commute up, a 4-hour commute back. He comes up of a Thursday for training, stays up the weekend, back again. He mentioned that he'd checked, planned the diary with Johnny McGeaney, the manager, and it was 10 sessions he'd be up for. And, you know, you can imagine the Leitrim, they nearly do 10 sessions in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. which I suppose underlines the achievement that of New York. Like, they wouldn't have had a proper, really, challenge game. Who are they going to play when they're out there? Like, so... But listen, they did have a very strong team this year, and you could only see that from the names on the team. Mm-hmm. You'd built two lads from Tipperary stood out for me straight away, Bill Maher, Alan Campbell. But it was a similar team to the team last year mm-hmm. that ran Sligo close. Yeah. So there's something building. You could see that last year, and they're getting better.
Yeah, that's important too, because I think the turnover of players every single year, it's hard to build a camaraderie, you know, and a team spirit when it's new people coming in and new people leaving all the time. So having players stick around, you know, super important, and to know that they're a part of a foundation here and they're building towards it, that commute from Shane Carty is just insane, isn't it? I mean, I feel bad now, I was giving off about coming down from Belfast to here in the train. I look pretty bad. But I think it was Paul Flynn was saying in the Sunday game that it's no secret Shane was just the fittest player in that team, in that Dublin panel. This is when Dublin were at their absolute peak and winning every All-Ireland, maybe one of the best teams ever. But they would do, you know, fitness tests, what, like 4 or 5 times a year at different stages of the season. And he was just guaranteed to come, you know, out first in all of them ones. So he is like a freak in that sense when it comes to that element of his game, the running. And that all comes from what, you know, serious determination and serious commitment. So it's brilliant to see that that's like transpiring and filtering through to his teammates and onto the pitch. And it'll be really interesting to watch them going forward. And like you say, they're playing Sligo next. We had a big win themselves against London. Pat Spillane Jr., corner forward, I think he scored 1-4, which is very impressive. And I do have a question for Shane, because Pat Spillane's goals, he scored a goal and went right into the top corner. And then he had another goal chance that hit the crossbar and it went over. And then I'm looking at Stephen Cohen for Mayo. He hit the crossbar as well. And in the Sunday game, all of the goals nearly were, and misses, were like they were aiming for the crossbar. And I remember reading Desi Farrell's book, and he said he aims for the crossbar because chances are it's too small a target to actually hit. And if you hit under it, then the keeper's got no chance because it'll bounce in over. Or hopefully it hits into the top corner, and then worst case scenario, you overhit it and it goes over the bar. You know, not the worst thing in the world, which is what happened to Pat Spillane. He got both ends of that stick. But I'm just thinking, is that something that's coached now? Like, as a goalkeeper, would you prefer that if someone was coming at you and they're going for the top bins every time rather than hitting it low and hard, which was what I was always told from underage, or did I just have really bad coaches?
I think it depends on when and where in the area you pick the ball up. You know, if you're shooting from further out, it's easier to put it into the top of the net. If you're coming a lot closer and the goalkeeper is closing you down, then it's probably a lot easier score keeping it on the floor than it is keep going high. The margin for error is very, very, very low, no matter what you're doing. I mean, if you're looking for the postage stamp all the time, there is that possibility you'll put it wide. You know, mm-hmm. I think certainly in a snapshot of a couple of games over this weekend, that certainly won't tell us. But I think down low, if you're going for a goal, your through one goal, one on one, is probably the better area. It's very difficult to elevate it from a kick, from a moving kick at speed, if a goalkeeper's advancing on you. So there's a few variables in that, you know, and it depends, mm-hmm. there's a lot of depends on the angle in which you're running at the goal as well. So there's a lot of different dimensions to it for both the decision maker who's taking the shot and the goalkeeper then, and you know, the environment he finds himself in. Is there defenders in front of him? Is there not? You know, so mm-hmm. there's a few different. If you look at Kieran Lemons, there was a goalkeeper and thing, and it rebounds back to Donny Smith, and he sockers it into the back of the net. You know, yeah. So there are, you know, every goal will bring its own different tactical issues, and I think players that I would have certainly played against them. Frankie Dolan being one, he'd always be looking for the top bin, all right, but yeah. he was pretty good at putting it into it, you know. So and it just depends on when and where you pick up the ball and the amount of people around you, and what are the challenges you face, and what are the barriers to putting the ball in the back of the net. You know, I don't think it's any one thing as such, you know.
Well, lads, wasn't it amazing? I suppose the scene, you could see how much it meant to the New York players, the pitch invasion straight after the game. Larry McCarthy was even down in the middle of it. He'd have his own connection to that. But I suppose, like, when you think about it, these boys, like we mentioned Shane McCarthy coming from Boston, there's other boys getting subways up to training and through the cold weather, like the commitment these boys put in. And I seen Johnny Glynn at the end of the match, and when there was the big pitch invasion, the rest of the bench had flooded, and he was just standing there and he was hugging someone, and you could see how much it meant to them there and then. Like, these boys, you know, it shows how much they put in. They put a lot in just to make it to the field when you're playing for New York.
Oh, they do. They absolutely do. And a very good friend of mine, who's also my coach at Colliery, Owen Mooney, is originally from Fermanagh, and he's a games development officer here in Dublin. He was games development officer with Rockland there for a number of years. And there was amazing work going on out there. You know, there was amazing work going on, you know, at underage level. You know, the amount of, you know, as I said, Indigenous people that not necessarily Irish backgrounds or Irish roots, but they're playing Gaelic football in Gaelic Park, and they're turning up to Rocklands and places like that. There is obviously a huge Irish element and a huge Irish diaspora over there, and huge Irish communities. But there are other communities now filtering into it as well, which is great. And you know, it's, I think all of that sort of embellishes the GAA. I think a couple of years ago I might have said that London and New York shouldn't be in the championship, but I don't necessarily think they should be in a senior championship. But they have the opportunity. They've proven they can compete now. And maybe in time, you know, we might have another cup outside of the Tailteann Cup, you know, that the likes of a London and New York can compete to even win. And I think, you know, winning a cup over in New York would be something else as well for them, or even for London. And we'd have to see where the GAA goes over the next, I think the next half a dozen years, there will be huge changes in how our competitions are structured and how football is structured. I think probably, you know, one of the things you'd look at is how can the gates be kept properly financed. And you know, a lot of the games over the weekend was very poor crowds at them compared to the league games, I thought. And New York been an exception, and maybe McHale Park been an exception, but other games didn't seem to have those crowds. Particularly in Clare and Cork was a small crowd as well, and Antrim and Armagh was a small crowd. So look, maybe as the season gets on and that will change. But I think also the cost of these things has to probably be looked at by the GAA, maybe with season tickets and things like that, to make it more affordable for families to go to the games. Because we do see a lot of kids coming out onto the pitches now, and mm-hmm. it's just great to see. It's great to see them interacting with the Johnny Glynns and, you know, the Carties, and, you know, obviously in our own county, the lads, you know, all the players. Because that's if we don't have that, we don't really have a future. You know, we're not like soccer. We're traditionally completely different. And to see that been allowed is great, firstly and foremostly. But to have more and more of it and to make it more affordable for families to go to matches, I think is hugely important going forward.
Definitely. Yeah, and I suppose another... it was maybe a weekend of surprises. And Clare, I don't know, you couldn't really write them off with what they've done in recent years, beating Roscommon last year. You know, they seem like a team who can always turn up on the big occasion. And that was exactly what they did at the weekend. It mightn't have been too much of a surprise than beating Cork, but they definitely did it the hard way, because having played with the wind, they were four down at half time. Mm-hmm. And they had to claw themselves back into it, and they did that. So they're a very gritty team.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Like during the league, you can't really be on. You know, the league tells all in certain sense. You know, if you get relegated, you probably deserve to get relegated. But Clare were probably the closest thing to being unlucky. Do you know what I mean? Because they ran so many of their games were so competitive, and they lost them in the stretch, like late in the game. So this would have been a huge, huge win for them to win a tight match like this, and to be four down at half time and to really show that their grit is brilliant to see. Cork, on the other hand, though, like that's a completely different story, and it's just all negative now, because you never know where you stand with them. Every time you think they're building something and they're going to push on, like we've been saying for years, there's been an over-reliance on Brian Hurley maybe, but then we thought that's sort of evolved now, you know, the Stephen Sherlock and Sean Powder and stuff, you know, they're sort of sharing the load, but Brian Hurley was taken out of the team because of injury, and they missed him so much. Like, I mean, he had that spark and they didn't know where to find it from anywhere else. Stephen Sherlock scored 10 points out of their 13. Imagine, and he was carrying an injury going into that game. So imagine he didn't play. You know, I know someone else would have took over the free kicks and probably done okay. But like, it does make you worry for them that they can be so brilliant, but also so fragile. Like if you take one or two little pieces away, then they completely collapse.
Well, the stat that stood out for me was that I seen Eamon Murphy had it. Yesterday was that of their minor and under 20 All-Ireland winning teams in 2019, only one of them players was starting on Sunday for Cork. So there's obviously been a bit of Colin Mahoney's injured, and Morris Shanley probably would have been starting, both of them were injured, but there's probably been a bit of a, you know, you'd expect more to come true from All-Ireland winning teams.
Well, if you kind of, you know, draw the inference from that, leaving, you look at Roscommon, I think over the team on the weekend, we had three debutants all in around the 2021. Dylan Rowan, who was on the 20 panel 2 or 3 years ago, he's come through. You know, there's been a few lads that have been brought through at that age group, and that's crucial. You know, if you're ever in doubt between an old fella finishing off and a young fella starting, you've got to bring young people through the system, and you've got to give them opportunities. And it just seems to me Cork seems to be dysfunctional. They just don't seem to be able to get it together, or keep it together after, as you alluded to there, been involved in those finals. And for a big county, I think an awful lot of resources are going into hurling. We know that, and I think it's accepted down there. But I think somebody down there with a football hat has got to get their act together, get a program in place, get a pathway for them, because they've been at this. This has been going on now for since 2010, since the one in All Ireland final with a really good group of players, experienced players, and there's been a lot of I think poor commentary coming out of the county in terms of the supports that they get, the coaching structures and all that sort of stuff. And you know, it's a huge county with a huge tradition, but yet they don't seem to be able to get it together. And Colm Collins down in Clare, you know, coming off a very small player base, it has to be said, he's performing miracles, you know, outside of the league stuff, you know, that could have went either way. They'll probably now find themselves in a Munster final, and you know, they'll go into the All-Ireland series confident. Mm-hmm. And the way I think he speaks, the way he has so much charisma, I know there was talk of him maybe pulling back, and the players rode in and supported him last year. He's 7 or 8 years in the job now. It's a long, long time inter-county managing, and to be able to keep that going and keep a county like Clare really competitive, you know, just shows the miracles that he's working down there. But for Cork, it's sad, I think, because I think Munster Championship needs Cork. You know, Kerry need Cork, I think, as well. You know, I think Cork and Kerry have that kind of historical, traditional kind of bone heading and bone fighting that they've been at for decades. I don't know if you had a better Cork, would you have a better Kerry? I know they won the All-Ireland last year, but is it possible for Kerry to keep going without a Cork? I don't think so, but it's something for them that internally I think they have to strive to be a lot better. And, you know, I think Billy Morgan has been working miracles still in his 70s with UCC. I think the likes of him should be kind of brought in to say, well, okay, let's put a structure here. Let's get the best people in and let's build from the bottom. You get the building blocks in and start with the youth and that. And as you said, Brian Hurley is kind of, you know, he's the pinnacle player for them. And if he doesn't play, you're left with one other player kicking 10 points for you. And that's not viable in championship football. You take out Young Sherlock and you're basically left with a 2 or 3 point team, maybe, you know, a 4 point team, and notwithstanding you get a free taker, you're winning championship matches at that. And you need to be able to go deeper into your bench, you know, to give players opportunity of playing at a championship level. So look, it's a problem for them. I'm too far removed to understand it all, but certainly for a big county, they're not competing where they should be.
Does it show how reasonable a manager Colm Collins must be that after 8 years they still want him back and they still want more from him? And you've seen it at first hand last year, Clare beating Roscommon. Like, these boys are well able to lift it when they need to on a big day.
Yeah, that's the second time they've beaten Roscommon in the championship in the last 6 years. You know, they beat us in Salt Hill as well in 2017 or 18, I think. I'm not too sure of the year, but they're very good players and they're buying into him as a man, you know, and shows what man management is about as well. Sometimes we get lost in all the tactical stuff and all the football stuff. Generally, that looks after itself. You know, you've got a coach now for everything. You have a strength and conditioning coach, you have a backs coach, you have a forwards coach, you have a midfield coach, you have a goalkeeping coach, you have a physiotherapist, I don't know, matter what else you have an analyst, all that. But it's the manager really that knits all that together, and it's the manager that keeps the players intrigued, and it's the manager that keeps the players interested. And generally that comes from respecting each other and doing the things that gains that respect. And whether it's an arm on the shoulder for one fella and a kick in the bottom for another fella, to have that skill set is crucially important. And you know, the good managers have that, the top managers have it. The football stuff generally looks after itself. It's the stuff on the side that needs to be done correctly. And obviously Colm is very good at it, you know, you'd know the way he speaks, he's terrific.
Definitely, yeah. I suppose the next game is the Armagh and Antrim. Maybe this one, I'd say, could have been nearly over after nearly 5 or 10 minutes when Armagh were 6 points up, and it nearly kind of just rambled on to the finish like that. Lee, yeah. You were watching it, so maybe not the most entertaining, but Armagh looked a little bit more attacking than they had been earlier in the league.
Yeah, they definitely were a little bit more adventurous, especially in the first half. We've been very critical of them in the league. They seem to have completely abandoned their kicking game, trying to play everything throughout the back. But I don't know if it was because they're playing Antrim, you know, a Division 3 team, and they know that they'll be able to outmuscle them, that they were just being a bit braver and going forward. It was still a bit... You don't want to be too critical because they scored 20 points. So, I mean, that's fantastic, obviously. But they just looked like they lacked like that ruthlessness. You know, they didn't manage to get a goal, which has been a big thing for them all season. I think only Ethan Rafferty's got the only goal for them. I might be wrong in saying it, but he's definitely one of the only few that's got it. They were missing some players. Jolly Oak Burns was missing. Rain O'Neill obviously missing. And it looks like he's going to be missing for the next game as well, according to the management. But... You know, they got the win. They're on the easier side of the draw for Ulster. They'll be eyeing up an Ulster final. I think they have to play the winner between Down and Donegal. They haven't been very successful in Ulster under Kieran McGeaney, so this will be the best chance that they've had in a long, long time. And I'm starting to think maybe Rain O'Neill being out for a couple of games might do him the world of good, because he's had the weight of the world in his shoulders as an Armagh player now for a few years. And like, he wears it well. You know, you only had to look at him, that free kick against Galway last year. Unbelievable. But just maybe taking him out of the spotlight. Because honestly, you go to any Armagh game, every programme, you know, it has to be a picture of Rian. Every social media post, they have to have his face on it. You know, every time they unveil a jersey, it's like it doesn't count unless it's him.
Even when he wasn't on the team, was the picture on the programme.
Yeah, in the drone game. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely insane. So maybe taking him out of the picture just for a little while, then slipping him back in, and just letting him express himself without all the pressure of the world. Conor Turbitt stepped up. He was brilliant. He got man of the match. And maybe not having Rain there, you know, give him that platform to do that, like how Matthew Tierney did for Galway with Shane Walsh and David Comer out, you know. things like that can be blessings in disguise, you know. But I am maybe, you know, I don't know if I'm clutching here, like, you know, just trying to figure some maybe positives here for Armagh to build on. But I'd fully expect them to make an Ulster final.
You were disappointed with them in the league, Shane?
I was very disappointed with them. They seemed to lack kind of a clarity around their play, really. You know, they'd abandoned, as Lee said, their kicking game, which I think it seemed to be proven very effective for them over the last couple of years. Notwithstanding, I know they had injuries and things like that, but I think you can still keep your focus on trying to develop the footballers within the system you want to develop. And I think it's really become almost a game. Their game became very centred around Ethan Raftery coming out of goal. A lot of players didn't seem to understand where or what they were doing. I particularly watched them in the Roscommon League game, and there seemed to be a frustration born out of the way they were playing, the speed in which they played. And if certain things didn't work for them, then they reverted back to type into a very defensive block, which I suppose most teams do. But there just didn't seem to be that fluidity in their football that there was last year. And when you look at them, particularly since in the last 2 years, there's been a change there seemed to be a change in direction in how they were playing. But I'm not so sure are the conflicted that's the right now way to play, or can we find a hybrid model to get the best out of our players? And maybe, you know, when they sit down as a management group over the next 4 to 6 weeks, they have a lot of time to plot out their course, you know, and maybe the league football, they'll say, yeah, we maybe learned this outward, we maybe learn that outward, and they may just factor in some of the changes and decide that, you know, this is the way we'll revert to how we played over the last 2 years when we get all our players back, and having Rian O'Neill back will be huge. And I have to say with Lee as well, he's 100% right. Sometimes taking a player like that out of the firing line, letting other players adjust, letting other players see, can actually get up to the mark and start sharing a bit of the load out around the team. Could that help? And I think if that can help, then you've got a better group, instead of just maybe factoring in one player that maybe might be easily targeted, particularly in Ulster, because it's a battlefield. But certainly as you go into, you know, a 3-4 game programme after that, you need all the players being able to chip in, or certainly more than one in the forward line being able to chip in with scores at vital times. And they have a battle maybe to find maybe the best way of playing. But if they got to an Ulster final and won an Ulster final, they would get confidence from that. And that'll be the challenge for them now over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
I was wrong. They're going to play Cavan next, and that's actually not an easy game at all, to be fair. A team full of confidence, so it's tricky enough.
Yeah, they might need Rian O'Neill back sooner than expected. Well, there were other good wins for Wicklow. Shane McConville's obviously flying there to beat Carlow. A good win for Offaly. They hadn't beat Longford in a long time in the Championship. Leash had a good win. Tipperary had a tough time against Waterford. We eventually scraped through. But before we let you go, Shane, we're not going to let you go that easy. We have a little quick fire round of questions where we're going to throw a few little spanners in the works. We're going to throw them at you, and tell us whatever comes into mind. So, first of all, who is going to win the Ulster Championship?
I think actually the Ulster Championship, it depends. The teams are relatively fresh, maybe from their league games. Tyrone seem to have come back into it a small bit. You know, they seem to be getting one or two players back. I kind of fancy them to win the Ulster Championship, funnily enough. I don't think they'll win the All-Ireland, but I do think Tyrone will win the Ulster Championship.
Okay. I can see Lee smiling beside me.
That's it, yeah.
That's one for you, Lee.
Yeah, thanks, pal. You got the brown envelope.
Who's going to win the All-Ireland?
Well, I was asked last week who'd win the Connacht Championship, and I said Galway would win the Connacht Championship and Mayo would win the All-Ireland. Have I seen anything from last Sunday to change my mind? Possibly, but then, you know, James Carr comes back into it, a couple of under-20s, young Toohey, young Callanan. Will Mayo get better after last Sunday? I think the break will do them good. I think it's awful hard, though, to look past Dublin. I really do, you know. It could be a Dublin Mayo, maybe All Ireland semi final with the winners winning it. But I think probably Dublin are going to be thereabouts. I think whoever beats them, it'll certainly go a long way towards winning it. So possibly Dublin.
What's your favourite sport to watch outside of the GA?
I'd have to say the old soccer. Yeah, obviously I played a bit of it and enjoyed my time in the League of Ireland in the 90s. It has changed since then, I think, to be fair. But I like the old soccer and obviously following the Gunners.
Yeah, well, when I seen the Arsenal wallpaper on your phone, I had a feeling that answer was coming. Am I right in saying you had a trial with Man United when you were younger?
Back in the day, back in 87, yeah, before I went to League of Ireland with Athlone Town, yeah, and been over there with them, yeah, for 2 weeks, incorporated a thing with Bobby Jordan School of Soccer. So yeah, it was a great experience and good fun, and came back, obviously played League of Ireland, and there was a bit of chatter and talk about City and Liverpool at the time, but it just didn't get over the line, and I think Shea Given took my place at Celtic as well. So yeah, look, it's one of those things.
You enjoyed it over there?
Yeah, it was a great time. One of the coaches, obviously Ferguson was there, and Kevin Morden was actually there at the time as well. He was great to me. Kevin was very nice to me. His Hazardous Common connections. I think John O'Garran himself are married to two girls from Westport. So, it's a long, long time ago, and it was a good time.
Who is your favourite Gaelic footballer to watch in the country?
Quite a few. I love watching like your Murtha in our own county and Ben O'Carroll. They're top players along with many more, but they're great lads to watch. I think we all love watching Clifford. I think, you know, he's just top class, and he's so skillful. He's been a tremendous player for Kerry, got them over the line, and obviously with Fossa and with his brother Paddy. Shane Walsh is a standout player as well, you know. I think Peter Canavan has a couple of right good ones coming up as well. So Rean O'Neill with Armagh, but I think anyone that watches football, David Clifford, and I think really the best footballer that has been pound for pound for the last 10 years, 15 years, is young McCarthy from Dublin. I think we'd have to give him one of the top spots.
You mentioned Ben O'Carroll there. Did you always know in St. Bridget's that this fella had it?
Special talent. I don't want to be, putting too much, pressure on his young shoulders. But yeah, I mean, we've been very fortunate in Bridges. We had a lot of really good footballers, but Frankie and Senan Kilbride were probably the standout forwards we've had over the years. And I think Ben could be the next one, you know.
Okay. Sweeper keepers, yay or nay?
A lot of people ask me this question. I think it depends on the management. It depends on the goalkeepers and the skill set of the goalkeeper. It depends on what they can and what they can't bring to a team. Some teams survive very well without it. I think Young Reap with Mayo, to be fair, is an excellent actual goalkeeper. Now last weekend his kickouts weren't what they were over the league season, but that was down to probably Roscommon and how they closed it out. He's a traditional style keeper. Then you've got obviously Niall Morgan, and you've got a lot going on with other goalkeepers around the place, Nathan Rafferty and that, and then you have Shane down in Kerry. So there's an awful lot of lads that, you know, have the skill set now to actually come out and play, because some of them, they're actually outfield players with their clubs. And some are now natural goalkeepers. So it depends on the team. I think there's advantages and disadvantages. My view is on it, you can't win an All-Ireland without a goalkeeper who's technically really, really good at goalkeeping. And I don't think any team has won an All-Ireland yet without a goalkeeper who's technically really proficient, because when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of it, you will concede goals with a goalkeeper that isn't technically able to make the save at the right time when it's in the melting pot. And that would be the overall view I would have on Gaelic goalkeeping.
Having played as an outfielder, you were, like when you were younger, you were obviously an ideal fit for a lad to be kind of bombing up the field as a keeper. Like, there wasn't as much of it in your time, but you enjoyed it, kind of. You played it as it lied, I suppose, was how you did it.
Correct, yeah. And I was supported by management at the time as well. You know, God rest Tony Shine was the first one really that I would have done it with, and then John Tobin and Tommy Carr going forward, and Kevin McStay and many more. But they facilitated it as long as it wasn't hardship or causing problems to the team. And it was a bit different that time in that, you know, forwards once you beat them once, they weren't going to run back. They never really ran back to defend, apart from maybe your wing forwards or your centre forward. Full forward line never did. Nowadays, it's changed. I mean, the full forward line is almost now always out past the 45. So it's easy for a goalkeeper to advance and bring the ball through almost to the halfway line now, with teams defending in a low block inside the 45-metre line at worst, and certainly inside the midfield half. So you can play, you know, you see a lot of ball going over and back to the goalkeeper where there's no possibility of the ball being taken off him. Maybe it's a referee slightly different in that he will take on players inside that cutting half, and he will cut, but he's really an inter-county probably midfielder, and he has got that skill set, and Kieran McGeaney and his management allow him to go and do that, and at times it works out well.
I watched your famous one against Castlebar this morning when you came running out of the goals. Maybe you were a bit old for it at that stage. You got a bit of an injury on the way back.
Well, yeah, I was a bit old for it. I was hitting my 45th year, I think, at that stage, and the pitch was soggy, and I probably hadn't done the training I was supposed to have done either at that stage in my career. But I got hurt the Achilles going back into goal, and I ended up lying down, getting substituted, actually, as it happens afterwards. That went into extra time against Castlebar, and that was an extra time. I hastened to add, I think refereeing performance that day left a lot to be desired, but Castlebar went on to the All-Ireland final. Didn't unfortunately get over the line, but that was one of my last forays out of the goal, I think. Yeah,
the physio got a bit of a hard time off you that day.
Pat did, yeah, he did, yeah, he still does, yeah, he did indeed. But I suppose when you're trying to carry 20 stone off the pitch at that stage, it's not simple either, you know. And I wasn't particularly wanting to go off either, and it's in for a little bit of game management and that sort of stuff, you know. But it did work out.
I was told a funny story yesterday, and you can tell me now if this is true or not, but I was telling one of the lads that Shane Curran was coming on the podcast, and they were in college with a fella from St. Bridget's who was also a goalie, and they were telling me that you were in goals at the time, he was the sub goalie, so your nickname was obviously Cake, and this man's nickname, what the boys in college were calling him, was Cupcake.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, actually, Shane. Yeah, Shane Mannion. Yeah, Shane was second goalkeeper in around the 2013-14. Went on to play minor football with Roscommon, played with Bridget's. Sadly, he's not playing at the moment. He hasn't played, I think, since the county final in 2018. But yeah, he was a very, very good goalkeeper. Great capability and great ability at the time, and they were never shy about putting nicknames on lads down in Roscommon. So poor old Shane ended up as Cupcake, yeah, and my day finished. He became the real one.
Where did Cake come from?
Look, it's a long story to that. My original nickname was Tiger after my dad was Tiger. He played with Castlereagh in the 60s and 70s and won four county titles and won the first official county title, Connacht title, for a club in 69. And God rest a friend of mine, Kieran Webb, sadly passed on, had started calling me Cockamillish. And that was abbreviated down to Cake by others who didn't know what the Irish for Cockamillish was. So that's how it came around. And that one stuck. It stuck obviously for a lifetime, and probably better known as that now than anything else.
Definitely. I think that's a good note to leave it for this week.
Can I just say something, Niall? just in relation to the Roscommon Mayo game the weekend, I meant to actually say it on the intro. We sadly lost a great man the weekend in Roscommon called Paddy Cummins. You wouldn't know him, and many in Castlebar wouldn't know him, but I just found out about his passing the weekend. And Paddy was one of these wonderful, wonderful GAA gents. He was an incredible soul. Since I started playing with Roscommon back in the early 90s, right to the end, even playing with Bridget's, he'd follow the matches. He was an incredible source of pride to us in Roscommon. He was a great follower. All his family were great followers of the game, and to his family, I'd like to wish them our condolences on Paddy's passing. He was in his 93rd year. But I'm sure as he was lowered to the floor on Sunday or Monday, he was looking down on us in Castlebar, and probably will be for the rest of the championship. So on that note, I would like to finish and wish them all the very best, and thanks to Paddy and his family for all the support over the years that they've given Roscommon football.
Yeah, he was definitely smiling down watching that on Sunday.
Certainly was.
100%. So, listen, thanks a million to everyone for listening. Thanks to Shane for coming into us.
Pleasure.
And we'll be back next week for more football talk.
Don't worry, hurling fans, we haven't forgot about you. We still have Niall McIntyre here, our hurling correspondent, to talk about the league final between Limerick and Kilkenny. Limerick winning by 11 points, Niall, and it wasn't unexpected.
No. To be fair, Kilkenny started the game well and got some lovely scores. Adrian Mullen, he was back from injury. He's probably Kilkenny's best player on the day and back with a bang and flew into it with an early score. Richie Reid followed up. And there were 3 points to no score up early on. But Limerick, I suppose, was similar in the Tipperary in the semi-final. They were slow to start. But once they got going, they just took off and there was no stopping them. And this game was over with 20 minutes to play. You knew Limerick were, there was no catching them. They were missing, I suppose, the daunting thing for the rest of all the other hurling counties really is that Limerick could do this without Declan Hannan, who's arguably one of their most important players. William O'Donoghue was suspended. Kyle Hayes was on the bench. He had a small injury. And Tom Morrissey, one of their best players, only comes on at half time. And they've lads stepping in. They've Colin Coughlin coming in, doing a great job at wing back. Cahill O'Neill flying it. Just even if they're missing a few players, they can step up. They've lads to come in, absolutely no bother. And I don't know, I was only thinking about this last night. Like, you think of a rest of Ireland or the best hurling team, an all-star hurling team, say. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to single out anyone from other counties who'd get into that Limerick team at the moment. They're just so good. From Nicky Quaid all up to the corner, Aaron Gillan is hurling some sensational stuff. And at the end of the game, they win by 11 points, and John Kiley is still, he's not happy. He's saying, we wouldn't be happy with the wides, the hit, and the overall performance even. And they're winning the league final by 11 points. I mean, it's just, I don't know where you go from here. As a Tipperary man, it's fairly daunting because Limerick don't seem to be slowing down whatsoever.
Yeah, it is frightening. And Dara Donovan got man of the match, and he sort of gave an insight to that mentality. He's quoted here. He said, this is a squad effort. It's 37 players. For the first time ever on Tuesday night, we had everyone. Every one of the 37 training on Tuesday night. They're all pushing for places ahead of the Waterford game. I mean, there's 37 of them, you know, and they're all fit and active. It's terrifying.
Yeah, they're not missing anyone. Like, and yeah, that was what John Kiley was saying, was that, you know, we know that if we show up like this, we'll be beaten against Waterford. And like, I'm sitting there listening to this, I'm thinking, no, you won't. Like, you'll still win. They seem to be on a different level. Like, the interviewer, I think it was Micheál O'Donnell, was making out to John Kiley, do you know, like you'd be okay. You played well. You got won by 11 points. This came fairly easy to you. But he was saying, do you know, we don't really focus on the opposition. It's all about hitting our own targets and so on. And they just, do you know, when you're talking like that, you're not even focusing too much on the opposition. It's just like a team that's on a completely different level. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what they were yesterday. I suppose Aaron Gillan, O'Donovan got man of the match, but Aaron Gillan, for me, as he often is, was probably the main man. His goal was something sensational, just something that very few people would do or can do. When he doubles on the ball after being passed it in by Seamus Flanagan, landed unbelievably for the first goal as well, coming out like just hopping over Park Walsh to catch the ball and setting up Barry Nash, and just to have it every way. And it's very daunting now, you'd have to say. They're sensational to watch, like, but yeah. Just, you know,
the competition seems to be within county. Like, even that, what he was saying there, like, he's more worried about the players in his own squad coming and pushing for places and pushing him out of the team. They're not afraid of anyone else in the country. They're just fighting for places, knowing that they've got something really special here.
Yeah, they certainly do. I don't know where we're going to go from here. Who's going to? It's going to take something special to stop them this year, because they just seem to be. It just seems like this year is, and I know there could be an argument that other counties just realised they watched Waterford win the league last year, and they seen Waterford blow up in the championship, mm-hmm. and maybe they seen how much Waterford put into that, that they're saying, like, well, listen, we're not going to beat them twice in 1 year, so maybe we will ease back a small bit in the league. And you could see that in how Galway played against them in Salt Hill. They weren't up for it at all, mm-hmm. really. I'd say Clare, when they played them, it was a completely different game to the Clare that horsed into them in Semple Stadium last year. So maybe, and I'm hoping this is the case, that other teams were just holding a little bit back and not giving it the full welly against Limerick in the league, but they'll have to have been holding a lot back, mm-hmm. if they want to beat them, because they're definitely on a different level right now anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, Cork, they put it up to them, and that, like, they mustered up a victory, although that was so early on. I mean, do you think that'll actually be a negative going forward?
Well, look, Cork will be part of the chasing pack, along with Tipper. Like, Munster is going to be competitive. Whoever, like, it's just five teams there with a huge chance. And then, you know, Kilkenny, I don't know, they obviously weren't at the same level as they were in the All-Ireland final, mm-hmm. when they did run Limerick fairly close. Mm-hmm. Last year, like, you couldn't say Kilkenny were taking it easy. They were hitting Limerick hard yesterday, and do you know, it's just Limerick, they just managed to weather the storm. You're kind of thinking early on when Kilkenny are winning, you're thinking, is this the day?
Yeah.
They're going to struggle, they're 3-0 down, but they just managed to always weather the storm. It was the same against Tip. Mm-hmm. Tip were 5 or 6 up, it's in the semi-final, absolutely flying, and then just Limerick come out of the blocks and clean up in the second half. So and I suppose elsewhere there was a great win for Offaly, who are on a bit of a on the rise, you'd have to say, at the minute. They had a good win over Leash would have been, Leash might be seen as a team who are coming back a small bit. They had a poor league campaign and were relegated after losing to Westmeath, and then Offaly came along and beat them. Owen Cahill was very good for them, which Offaly are going well under Jolly Kelly now this year. You would have thought when Oisin Kelly, their star man, was ruled out with a cruciate earlier in the year, that might derail them a small bit, but they've kicked on. And I suppose at the other end of the spectrum, it just shows what momentum can do for a team, in that Offaly beat Kildare in that Division 2A promotion final last week to get promoted up to Division 1. Mm-hmm. And Offaly go out and beat Leash, and Kildare, on the other hand, go out and get hammered by Carlow, 18 or 19 points. And Kildare haven't beaten Carlow by 16 or 17 points in the league. So it just shows momentum. Mm-hmm. It's such a fine balance, and Offaly going one way and Kildare going the other.
Mm-hmm. It's all but sort of riding that crest of the wave. That's all we have time for today. Remember to like, share and subscribe to the GAR, and we'll see you next week.